Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, musicians, and comedians that perform here and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what makes our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Don Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I have the pleasure of introducing you to one of the most interesting humans I personally know, Avery Ferrari. She is a former Air Force sergeant where she provided direct security support to the President of the United States. While serving her country, she earned a spot on the U.S. Armed Forces cycling team, ultimately securing a top 10 finish in her debut international race at the Military World Cycling Championships in Belgium. After 7 years of dedicated service in the Air Force, Avery completed a bachelor's and master's degree in exercise physiology from James Madison University. Her groundbreaking research on dietary nitrate supplementation and her cycling performance showcased her deep understanding of sports physiology. Overall, she has accumulated over 11 years of competitive cycling experience and 7 years cross-country running experience. Now, as a respected cycling coach at Otter House Coaching, Avery draws upon her wealth of experience to mentor athletes of all levels. Her passion for cycling and commitment to athlete wellness are evident in her coaching approach, which blends scientific rigor with boundless enthusiasm. Through her coaching, she continues to inspire others to reach new heights and embrace the joy of cycling. Welcome to the show, Avery. It's great to have you on here today.
Thank you so much, Dawn. It's awesome to be here.
It is awesome to be here. It's a joy to have you here. We're recording in my home today.
It's beautiful.
Oh, thank you. And
the dogs are extra inviting.
They are. We'll see how well they do. But I am excited that you're here to share with us today your latest accomplishments and endeavors. You have an extraordinary story. And now you are Coach Avery Ferrari. There is a lot to dig into in terms of your journey in life, but let's start with this one. Can you share the story of how you met your business partner, George Kanang, and how your partnership has influenced your coaching philosophy?
Oh, yeah. George and I go way back almost, I guess, 11 years now. I met George, who was the director for the Armed Forces cycling team for Military World Championships. I guess back in August 2013. So I met George then, and he's been a great mentor and training partner. And George is a good friend. So we work together with Otter House Coaching, and it's just him and I. And we're kicking butt, helping people get fast on their bikes or running or whatever their endurance endeavors are. It's kind of where we land, but mostly cycling. And we're chatting almost every day on the daily. So what coaching stuff and life stuff as well. So
he coached you in the race that had you place in Belgium.
Yeah. Okay. He was the team director at that time, and I was working with another coach for the training side of things at that time. But George, I'd say, from the moment I met him, he had valuable experience that he was coaching that absolutely helped shape my cycling career.
What would you say his coaching philosophy focuses on when he's training athletes that has influenced you?
There's no one size fits all. There's no one size fits all model, but also understanding the human side of things. Anyone can go online and find a structured plan that you will generally see fitness improvements from. But a lot of folks want that face-to-face, that human on the other end of their training journey to encourage them on the way and kind of meeting clients where they're at. I'd say all of those things are deep pillars of George's coaching philosophy that I have learned a lot from.
Yeah, I found something interesting when I was checking out the coaching website that I really thought brought a lot of richness to the services that you offer. He's actually located in West Virginia, and you are here in Harrisonburg, Virginia. So that gives you some direct contact with people that live in those parts of the country, but also you have opened up the coaching services to connect with people globally via virtual coaching.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. George, it has been a racer on the East Coast for 20 plus years, 30 years almost. And he's well connected and respected in the cycling community. So absolutely, it's a huge, huge benefit to have that relationship with someone who has such a wealth of knowledge of cycling and racing. So and then yeah, virtual coaching certainly widens those borders a bit to getting people high quality structured training to help them reach their goals.
Do you have the opportunity to do security detail for high profile individuals, including a US president?
Wow.
Okay. So how has that experience shaped your approach to discipline and focus both in your military career and in your athletic pursuits?
Yeah, I was at the 811th Security Forces Squadron at Andrews Air Force Base in Washington, D.C., and that job is considered a no-fail job. There's a lot of pressure that goes into making sure bad things don't happen to people who have important jobs. And so in the Air Force, it is encouraged that within your career field, the way that you are training, the way that you are doing your everyday job is reflecting the standards that would need to be displayed in a wartime environment or a high stakes environment. That's kind of the deep down, you know, philosophically, yes, as a veteran, I have other, remove any sort of philosophy aside from the politics of what the military does and is within my role as a service member at that time. There was a high degree of emphasis on perfection and that can be achieved through little bits of training on the day-to-day basis. What are things that are within your control to prepare for scenarios in the future? And I think training is representative of that in that you can take off little chunks of different scenarios at different times to train a response to an experience that may or may not ever happen. But if it does, you're prepared for it. So that's kind of how those things are maybe a little interconnected, but obviously very different type of stress.
I would imagine so.
Yeah.
Because on the bike, if you're going out for the kind of rides that you do, which is off-road cycling and longer rides to be able to achieve what you've been able to achieve, you have to prepare for, you might get a flat tire or have an accident or...
Exactly. Yeah. And something I've learned more recently that was something I feel like I probably endured longer than I needed to, but bringing a toothpick along with me on bike rides, because if you've ever gone 70 miles with a piece of granola stuck in your teeth, bringing a toothpick along is pretty important. So that's been a more recent lesson I've learned in recent years. But yeah, packing essential tools that may improve the your survival while you're out riding in the woods, for sure. There are military applications to being prepared for those scenarios.
Yeah, and you've been able to travel the world doing this, which has had to provide some incredible experiences. Could you highlight some of the most memorable moments or places you visited during your cycling adventures?
So I think my first UCI World Cup.
What's UCI?
It's Swiss Union. It's the World Cycling Federation.
Okay.
They are the Olympic fascicle of cycling. You know, they're the governing body of international cycling. So the UCI World Cups are the highest level of races, sanctioned races, that there's a World Cup series and they sanction the World Cups. And I think my first ever World Cup experience in the Czech Republic in 2015 was probably the most memorable, because it was also the first time in my life that I ever had stitches.
Really?
Yeah, I crashed pretty hard in my first World Cup, as one does, you know.
Oh, like, so, really? I wouldn't know.
yeah, it was an experience. I somehow found myself at the starting line with the world's best mountain bikers and having a little bit of imposter syndrome and yeah, nerves take over and the gun goes off and you're sprinting as hard as you can for, you know, to hang with the group. Races usually last 90 minutes, but I think I maybe only lasted 45 minutes by the time I got pulled because of fitness, for sure. I was not up there, and then also crashing and like bleeding from my arm after I crashed into a tree, but I still have that scar, so it's memorable. I'm reminded of that scar on my arm
every day,
frequently. Yeah. So, and that was the first World Cup too. They, you know, as they're counting down the last couple minutes, there's 25,000 people in Czech Republic who come to this race, and you know, they are playing Thunderstruck by AC/DC.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that.
And you hear the crowd go silent, and in the last, you know, you hear the announcer say, anytime in the next minute, the gun will go off, and the crowd goes silent, and they just play A Beating Heart over the loudspeaker.
Oh my
gosh.
So in
the last minute, it's, you just hear, dum, 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 and then the gun goes off, and then you hear 25,000 people screaming, and you hear everyone clicking into their bikes, and you hear people shouting and screaming, and you're just smashing on your bike as hard as you possibly can, just maximum strength, you know, trying not to crash into people and navigating through traffic. And there's 150 of the world's best mountain bikers, and you're kind of swept up in it all. And then you end up in the single track where there are people screaming on, you know, the outsides of the course at you and cheering for you. And you're going over rocks and down jumps and in and out of trees. And yeah, you crash sometimes, and I'm no stranger to crashing a bike. So, but that was a memorable one.
I would imagine it was. How often do you crash?
Oh, I would say like one good one a year. I mean, one good crash where maybe you're limping around for a couple days, and you generally get up right away from 99% of them, but 1% of them you might take a little extra time to stand up. Those are like once in a decade. Like I've maybe had like one or two of those in my whole cycling career. But yeah, crashing, usually it's just a little foot dab, you know, like your foot kind of pops out and you kind of maybe take a slow controlled tumble, but
okay. And that doesn't intimidate you at all that this could happen?
It's worth it. It's totally worth it.
And why is it worth it?
Going fast on a bike is freedom. It is my meditation. And it's something that I've known about myself since I was 10, 11, 12 years old, riding around Eau Claire, Wisconsin, where I grew up with my cousin, on our Walmart bikes, feeling that freedom as a kid. I think I, at 31 now, 20 years later from going on these long summer bike rides on summer break, I still feel like a kid. And how cool of a thing to experience, you know, getting to live in a body that gets to feel that eternal childhood as you rip through gravel roads and mountains with your friends hooting and hollering and getting to eat like all the best foods too. yeah, that's what makes it worth it. And the crashes are kind of just the donation to the mountain, you know.
The donation to the mountain. I don't think I've ever heard it put that way before. But I did see you light up talking about it, and this has been an amazing vehicle to take you to places like Belgium and the Czech Republic. What are some of the other countries has cycling taken you to?
Quebec. Well, I mean, Canada, but Quebec, the Mont Saint-Anne World Cup, terrifying, terrifying course. Yeah, the biggest rocks, very slick, very, very slippery rocks, very steep. Norway was incredible. Germany was amazing. And then almost all 50 states. I've never been to Alaska or Hawaii, but all east, west, north, south, race bikes all over. So,
wow. Yeah. What's the experience like packing a bike on an airplane?
Oh my God. The worst part about bike racing is packing the bike. Yeah. I was at the level to get to those races, but I wasn't at the level where someone was doing that for me. So I personally, I had a great mechanic, someone local who they work at a bike shop in town who I had a lot of trust in to tuning my bike the way I wanted it to. And he would usually give me a nice pre-race tune up and I would pack the bike into a big case. Essentially, it's a big plastic hard shell. They make soft shell cases too, but I had a hard shell case at that time, and you take the wheels off, you take the handlebars off, you take the pedals off, you wrap the rear derailleur in bubble wrap and cardboard and tape, and you flatten it in between pieces of styrofoam, and you pack it, and then you hope that it makes it to Europe unscathed.
Yeah.
You know, the nightmare is looking out the window and seeing the luggage handlers or the employees of the airline tossing a $10,000 bike in the air in a case. But I never had a bike break, but there were a few times where the bike was inspected where it wasn't packed quite as nice as I would have liked it to be. But And then you get there and then you build the bike again and then you race it and then you pack it and then you fly back and then you build it again so you can train on it. So it's not a fun part of bike racing.
No, but it shows the commitment to what you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you have to check it in when, you know how we check in our luggage. You check in it in the bike as well as your regular luggage?
Yes. Yep. You've got to check it in there and pass it off. And different airlines have different rules. So usually I was doing a little research beforehand, so I knew what to expect when I got there. But while I was racing, I was in the Air Force's World Class Athlete Program. So I was able to travel on military orders. So usually when you travel, you get a little slip of paper saying that you're traveling on orders, and usually the bike would get checked, no problems. But there were times where I had to pay for it as well. It's expensive.
Okay. Wow. That is quite the experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's still worth it.
Totally worth it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, you know what? I love traveling too. I don't pack bikes, but I will pack myself and take myself across town to Bridgewater where I can get some of this absurdly flavorful gourmet popcorn from our sponsor, Preposterous. I brought some for you. What do you think?
I love popcorn so much. My partner and I eat popcorn on the regular, but this is something better. I couldn't make popcorn this good. Mm. It's kind of like, I've always dreamed of being in a popcorn commercial. I am getting to also hear myself chew it.
Look at us making dreams come true on the Virginia's for Laughers podcast for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I just don't want to wake up. This must be a dream.
It is a dream. Yeah. It's good, right? It's so good.
It kind of gives me that autonomic sensory meridian response, those little tingles that you get on your arms when you hear something that is crunchy or tappy or, yeah, you get a little, you know, I'm getting that right now.
They're high achievers like you. Did you know that?
You were telling me about them. They sound great.
They are. They're Shenandoah Valley's only award-winning popcorn. Mm. And even better, their kernels are grown right here in the valley, and their factory is 100% nut-free.
Locally grown.
Mm. And they make for a perfect gift for any occasion, literally anything. Birthdays, anniversaries, pretty much anything you can think of. Plus, Laughers, you can get a 15% discount using promo code LAUGH15. Just visit prepopsterous.com. That's PrePopsterous.com. Use their code and get some of their delicious popcorn today.
I'm going to have to do that. I'm going to take you up on that code.
You better. Now back to you, Avery.
Thanks, Dawn. It's great to be here.
It is great to be here. I'm so curious about you getting on that cycling team for the U.S. Air Force. How long of a process was that?
Well, so I knew I had that cool job at Andrews, you know, where I was
working security detail for the president.
Yeah,
we're not sharing because it's security.
Yeah, OPSEC. It's in our nation's interest.
Yeah. I don't even know who the president was. So,
I had a cool job. It was rewarding and it was intense, but I liked riding my bike more. So I knew I loved bike racing, and I found out that the Air Force had this world-class athlete program that if you could achieve a national ranking high enough where there was an offshoot chance that you could be selected for an Olympic team, you would just need a letter of endorsement from the USA Cycling head coach, and you could apply for this program. And so I applied and probably waited almost a year before I heard anything, and I was still racing that whole time period, and I got in. So, you know, I was training for the Olympics as far as the Air Force was concerned, and what my training was structured around was training for the 2016 Olympic team. And part of that qualification required certain performance metrics at international level competition. So I was able to race internationally, but wasn't at that point in my athletic development that I could have, you know, in hindsight, gotten to the point of making an Olympic team in only less than two seasons. So, but it was in that time period that it, you know, I was working as though that could be a possibility, and it was really intense, but it was fun.
Yeah. How many hours were you working for the Air Force a week, and how many hours of training were you doing at the same time per week, would you say, on average?
So when I was at Andrews working on the security detail before I was in the world-class athlete program, I would say I was working, you know, 40 hours a week in terms of Air Force scheduling, and then I was probably training anywhere between 12 and 20 hours a week on the bike, and that would be distributed between mountain biking, road cycling, running. Obviously the Air Force has some PT requirements, so we were still running and push-ups and sit-ups, and you had squadron PT and stuff. So as far as my specific cycling goes, I would say, yeah, probably averaged out to be 12 to 15 hours a week.
Wow. You mentioned you discovered a lot about yourself through cycling. Could you elaborate on what you've learned and how cycling has contributed to your personal growth and self-awareness?
Oh, yeah, totally. Well, I grew up in Wisconsin and found endurance sports as a place very early on to kind of ride away from something, and that being my experience as a transgender person, and that is something that I've known for a very long time. I have memories growing up where I would tell my mom how ugly I felt. Growing up, I would just Mom, why am I so ugly? And it wasn't that I was getting feedback from the world that I was being told. It was just how I saw myself growing up. And so the bike was kind of an escape, but it was also freedom at the same time. It was it was a place where I was able to kind of silence or like equilibrate the frequency of my existence in my mind. I was able to think about everything and still am. The bike is still a big component of my identity. And obviously that relationship at times was, you know, parallel with self-harm. Mm. I think I was using cycling as kind of literally a method to ride away from who I was or ride towards something that I thought the world wanted me to be. Mm. And you can't outride something like this. So I found myself on the bike and I started my transition almost 5.5 years ago now. And that came with kind of forfeiting what I could have been on the bike in terms of my trajectory as an athlete. But I couldn't outrun that anymore. And it's so much easier now to just live life in the current or the kind of the electromagnetic field that I feel like my brain aligns most with. And how cool is it that I can relinquish myself of the pressures to be something that I never was while getting to be who I am and doing the thing that I still love. And that's ride my bike as who I am. So the bike has kind of been a tool for deep, deep, deep meditation and a lot of solitude, a lot of solitude. And when I was training professionally, days would go by without saying a word. I think that was a sacrifice as I was training more. Social time, mm-hmm. parties, you know, those were never things that were important to me, but those were things that, I guess wouldn't have helped me, do the things that I needed to do at the time. So a lot of self-reflection in that time, long hours on the bike. When I was in the world-class athlete program, I was training probably closer to averaging like 15 hours a week. And then over 20 on some of those longer days. I think the longest week of training I ever did was a 30-hour week. And that whole time, you know, trying to kind of ride away from who I am. Mm. But that's kind of how the bike helped me discover who I was.
What would you say was the easiest part of making the transition? Or starting down the road of the transition.
Yeah, there was nothing easy about it. There's nothing easy about it. I would say it's been rewarding, though. It has been, I would say the most rewarding part of it has been to be proven wrong that I will lose everyone in my life and lose friends and lose family. And I have lost friends and family because of this, but I've gained more than I've ever had in my life, and it feels more authentic and real than anything I've ever imagined. So I'm saturated on love and support that it makes any loss seem pretty pretty minor. Mm. So that's been a rewarding component. And you know, kind of overcoming that fear of mine that coming out and being open about who I am would be the end of the world. And it turns out it isn't. Yeah, it's actually like the best world I could have imagined. So, well, for myself, like, my internal existence
yes.
is easier now okay. than it ever has been. But
yeah. For people that may not have a transgender person in their life or, you know, just not well versed on what that journey is for someone, what would you say is the biggest misconception that you've come across?
Oh, geez.
Maybe there's more than one, but...
Yeah.
Or something that people misunderstand about the transgender community that's impacted you. Or impacted the community.
Yeah, there's so many angles I feel like I could answer that from.
Yeah.
You know, it's... The misconception that trans people are out to make other people trans, I think that is something like no trans people want other trans people to survive in a world that can be hostile towards them. But I would also never wish this type of, you know, personally for me was a very traumatic experience to be born. All of a sudden I'm born and I'm growing up and I'm like, wow, this feels really weird being in my body. Why do I hate my body? Like, why is this? It's like traumatic, big T trauma to be born where you just feel absolutely like you're living in someone else's house. And everyone's telling you that house is yours, and you're like, "Yeah, but this is a foreign place," and the misconception: trans people can be happy, trans people can be productive members of society that deserve to be treated with respect. Based off of the way you introduced me, it's tough for me to say like, yeah, I'm just a normal person who does normal things, but you know, professional mountain biker, like
all those things are true.
It's like, yeah. But so it's tough for me to sometimes, you know, feel normal for so many reasons, like, being a trans person, it should be normalized. That should be a normal thing for people to see and for them to not lose their minds over. So all that is to say, that misconception, I wouldn't want anyone to ever be born into a life where them choosing to be who they are results in them losing support from the people that brought them into that world. Or from them to be able to go on and chase their dreams athletically, professionally, academically, whatever that looks like, that it's okay for that to be a boring part of that person's life and let them write the narrative of the types of experiences or accomplishments that they want to have without their gender identity needing to be the thing that defines it.
Appreciate you sharing all of this. It's a personal journey for you, what
yeah.
you're going through right now, and even sharing a part of it is meaningful
yeah.
to people, I
yeah.
think,
Thank
to
you.
Understand. You're welcome.
Thank you.
I think people, whether we agree, whether it's gender or any other topic, whatever the person is sharing with us, just listening and hearing what they have to say and caring about them really helps build relationships and brings our whole entire race closer together.
Totally. Yeah. The intersections of those experiences. It's yeah. We talking is talking to people, having that conversation can feel like a burden at times, but it is something that I think is important to share that experience of those different intersections.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Because it's just having that understanding, like I never thought about it that way, or I didn't understand someone
sure.
was going through XYZ. It helps you build a connection through empathy.
Totally.
And
yeah.
that's being a human being.
Totally.
Yeah. I like that. You have had some very important people in your life that have played an influence on your cycling career, and now you're a coach yourself. But you had a coach of your own, Jeremiah Bishop, and he played a big role in your cycling career and personal development. What lessons did you learn from him that were particularly impactful?
Jeremiah needs to be a study. That someone needs to just study that guy. He's coming up on 50 years, and in terms of the longevity of his cycling career and the amount of time that he's spent riding a bike and having a career around it is impressive. I learned so much from Jeremiah. I learned what a tough person looks like. That guy is tough as nails. I've seen him flat a tire in the mountains before in a snowstorm and you know, needing to make some really, really interesting tire adaptations to get out of the woods.
Oh my gosh.
He's a lot of fun to ride with, and I've learned a lot from him for sure.
So when things get tough for you, think about some of the times you've seen him push through.
Yeah.
You're laughing. How come?
Oh yeah. I mean, sometimes I think about, you know, decisions of you know, interactions we've had, and yeah, they're always, it's never a dull moment with Jeremiah.
That's why you're laughing.
Yeah. We've done some crazy rides, and always keeps things interesting.
Is he a bit of a character I'm picking up on?
He's absolutely, there's no one in the world like Jeremiah Bishop. He is a one of a kind. I learned, so one of the things that I think were really impactful that I think applied to the military side of things was, he was a firm believer in training like you fight. And we would do simulations, race simulations at Massanutten outside of Harrisonburg. And we would do like practice races where you would be doing four laps of a lap that took 15 to 18 minutes to complete. And you would practice racing. And I think that race simulation and being intentional on your training days to like, yeah, it's not just a training ride. It's like a race simulation. Everything from the time that you're getting up in the morning, your breakfast, you know, treat it like a race. I think that was probably the most valuable thing that I learned from Jeremiah.
I think you picked up some resilience and tenacity.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think some of those things probably allowed us to get along pretty well. I think we had some shared resilience for different reasons. No trail is the same that any of us are on. So, we meshed well on the resilience side of things.
So if I recall right, then you met him when you made the U.S. Air Force cycling team. Where did you pick up this coach?
Yeah, I would say a few months before the Military World Cycling Championships. Is when I met Jeremiah, and then started working with him pretty close to then. We had some initial consultations, and then worked with Jeremiah until, I would say, 2016 or 2017. So three years I worked with Jeremiah. And then, you know, fitness goals changed, race goals changed. I was at a station in Dover, Delaware, the last 2 years of my Air Force career, and having a coach at that time didn't really mesh with my work schedule. So, but I still get to see Jeremiah every now and then. And if it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have ever discovered Harrisonburg.
Okay.
So I owe him that. I think Harrisonburg is the most beautiful place in the world. And that's after traveling for many years to different parts of the world and getting to ride bikes in different parts of the world. Harrisonburg is by far my favorite place to ride bikes. And every day that I get to wake up and go out on bike rides here in this valley, feels like such a privilege. the mountains feel so old, and the mountains feel weathered, and they feel settled, and they feel mature, and I feel like this is where I want my roots to go deep. You know, let my roots kind of sink in here. This is a place where I feel most at peace, and so fortunate that a place like this exists. I kind of feel like I'm a big fan of Lord of the Rings. I'm a big Lord of the Rings
nerd. I like those too. Yeah.
And we live in such a scenic part of the world that it's hard not to be transported to the Shire sometimes. So it's fun for me to kind of, you know, we see so much awful stuff on the news. Mm-hmm. So we're subjected to so much information, and it's really fun to escape on the bike now from some of those things and just kind of pretend to be a cute little hobbit riding a bike through the Shenandoah Valley, you know, or through Middle Earth. In a post Sauron, you know, like the Sauron guy has been defeated, you know, the peaceful Shire.
That's right.
The ring's already been destroyed.
Okay. Yeah. We're in a safe zone.
Yeah. Yeah. No orcs.
Yeah. Please. No. No. So did Jeremiah say, let's meet up in Harrisonburg and go cycling? That's how you found out about?
So I think I met him in 2011 or 2012 at a bike race in Colorado at Leadville 100. It's a 100-mile mountain bike race in Leadville, Colorado, at high altitude, very high altitude. I met him there and told him I was stationed in DC, and he invited me out to Harrisonburg to ride, and came out one November. I want to say it was November of 2012. I came out to Harrisonburg for the first time underdressed. It was very cold. It was a very cold day. There was ice on the roads, I remember. And I'll never forget that ride. I was very cold, but it was also cool to get to ride with someone who was very well known in the cycling community, and knew I needed to come back. So that's where I did my training for those 2 years. While I was in the athlete program, I was able to be here in Harrisonburg for those 2 years and training and riding with Jeremiah several days a week. So kind of through kind of like osmosis, something I learned from my very first coach back in Wisconsin was a pretty fast way to get faster is to ride with people who are faster than you.
Makes sense.
And I think getting to push myself and to ride with Jeremiah, you know, as the months went on, getting to hang with him a little bit longer on the climbs, not getting dropped, all of that stuff came around. So that was getting to train with someone who had made a living off of competing internationally helped me make that jump pretty quick.
You just used a term, not getting dropped. I do not know what that means.
Do you know, do you know what a VO2 max test is?
I do.
So you know when you're at the highest limit, you just give up. You're volitional fatigue.
Right.
So when you are riding a bike, you can ride at an intensity. You can't exceed your own capacity. So if someone is stronger than you and you are riding a bike behind them and they are performing at a level that is higher than your own, you physically will not be able to maintain or match the speed in which they are traveling. So you are dropped from the draft. You can no longer hang on to that wheel. So getting dropped is, definitely a colloquialism.
Every industry has its own lingo.
Yes. Yeah.
Me at VO2 max, for those who are not familiar with exercise science, is basically a max stress test on how much your body can handle at the highest level of fitness for you.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So, which usually involves a treadmill.
Yes, or a stationary bike. Yes. And there's some crazy ones that a rowing machine has been adapted to a hose. Yeah, yeah.
It's a whole thing.
It's a whole thing.
I think when I was, I know when I was reading about you and all of your accomplishments, one of the things you said about Harrisonburg is you I think it's called the 2000 hour mountain or something, but you specifically chose to train on that one because you were bad at what that trail provides people. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So there is a trail at the Western Slopes called 2000 hours.
Okay. And, I was close.
And it was built by the Shenandoah Valley Bicycle Coalition, where I think the cumulative amount of time that went into building that trail was 2000 hours. The total.
That makes sense.
It's very rocky, very steep, very fast. And growing up in Wisconsin, we did not have the types of rocks to ride on that are out here in Virginia. So that wasn't something I grew up riding. And that was a trail that scared the living daylights out of me. And I knew that if I wanted to be able to ride those types of things, I would need to ride that frequently. So I would do many laps on 2000 hours. I don't think I spent 2000 hours on 2000 hours, but probably 100 hours, I would say, I've ridden that trail.
How do you feel about riding it now? Does it scare you now like it did then?
I think it scares me now more than ever because it's become eroded and there are sections that are it's a little chunkier than it used to be, but I still love it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. You're just out there doing all kinds of things. And now as a coach, you are tailoring programs to fit the individual needs and goals of the athletes you work with, and you're considering factors such as experience level, life schedule, and personal objectives. How do you approach all of that to help an athlete get better? What's your take on it?
Well, similar to when you enter another country, you have your passport checked, and I think going over someone's athletic passport, figuring out what countries they've stamped, what types of things that they've experienced, figuring out where they're starting from, and then asking them what their goals are, what certain performance metrics are they interested in improving, and then kind of mapping out a sustainable, evidence-based path for them that they can is achievable for them to bite little chunks off at a time and feel progress along the way, and helping time different amounts of stimulus on whether it be running or strength training or flexibility or riding, tailoring the amount of time and intensity that they're spending in any one of those activities to their work schedules. That kind of, and collaborating with them on that too. It's important to like collaborate on their schedules and figuring out what types of activities they get excited about too. So trying to keep it fun, while also, serving as an accountability piece for some folks, being the coach, pushing them where they need to and learning what types of support clients respond well to. I'm learning all the time. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that I had a lot of fun with at JMU too, as I was pursuing my academic career post-military, figuring out learning, feeling like I was really learning something that was easy for me for the first time in my life was really rewarding. And applying that now to coaching is just, I'm figuring it out. I'm only 6 months into trying to make it happen full time post grad school, and I'm feeling really fulfilled and energized by it. And I'm excited to see where it goes.
Yeah, with your academic experience too, can you explain a little bit further how specifically that plays a role in your working with athletes? Are you doing pre post testing? What parts of your academic experience are you applying to your coaching?
I mean, I think hands down, the first day that I stepped into a kinesiology class at JMU, I think about that. It was kinesiology 202, like a biological foundations of exercise science or something. And within those first couple days of that lecture, learning about sliding filament theory, how muscles work, that excitement, having my mind blown like that, is something that I transfer to my excitement and enthusiasm for building workouts that are designed to manipulate physiological processes to get a specific outcome to help someone achieve X, Y, or Z performance metric. So I think learning about all of those systems, after having had a significant career in cycling myself without knowing the microscopic level of what it was that I was doing and why I was doing it, getting to learn that and now getting to apply real world cycling experience, real world racing experience to plus the work that went into achieving those degrees, cycling coaching seems like the easiest place for me to exist without ever feeling imposter syndrome. It's something that I feel conventionally equipped to coach anyone and uniquely coached to coach specific demographics of athletes as well. So it's something that I found a lot of joy and fulfillment in, even if it wasn't something that I thought I would be doing, you know, post-grad school, even though it's also the most obvious thing that I would do post-grad school.
When you put your whole picture of your life together, it does make sense.
Yeah, it's kind of like, duh. Why? Yeah.
So. Yeah, it's all making sense now.
Yeah.
And you get to work with people one-on-one, and I'm sure you're observing challenges. And
I think you asked me how I fit that in to challenges, but... Yeah, I got off on a tangent there.
Oh, no, I think we're good.
Sure.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay.
What are some of the, in working with the athletes one-on-one, what are some of the common challenges you observe from their side in working with them? What do you see most often, and how do you help them overcome their obstacles to achieve their full potential?
Oh, okay. Great question. I'm going to stick to this one. I think I want to empower my clients to recognize messages their body is sending them when is it time to take a break? I think empowering athletes to be aware of some of those signs, empowering them to feel confident in letting me know that they need a day off. I'm not doing those VO2 max sprints up that mountain today because I'm feeling these things. I need a day off from exercise. I think that empowering athletes to have that tool in their toolbox helps the longevity of their training and the sustainability of their training. So I think seeing clients balance family, jobs. I coach some phenomenal human beings who are balancing a lot of very high responsibility things. One of the toughest being a parent, you know, some of my clients have kids, and that takes everything for some folks. And so seeing them continue to put in that work, even at weird times where the kids are maybe sleeping, they're training, they're getting that work in. So I think that's one of the cool things for sure that I have learned, to appreciating clients and also empowering them to kind of make those recovery decisions outside of the recovery days that I'm normally prescribing.
Mm. How many recovery days do your clients get?
Oh, that depends. That depends entirely on their passport.
How
full their book is. So there are times where some clients are going to be training one way or another. You know, we're not going to be hitting the same systems every single day in a row, but someone might be, even if it's just putting in a dog walk, putting in a day of strength training, putting a 2 days of riding in, putting a day of running in. There are some people that go 5, 6, 7 days before there is a day off in there. There are different training models where someone can train at a low enough intensity that doesn't result in a significant amount of fatigue that someone can perform exercise at that intensity for many, many days in a row without it having serious fatigue outcomes. So it's all playing around with that. But yeah, some people get one day of rest a week. Some folks get four.
Mm-hmm.
It all depends.
Individualized.
Yep, exactly. Yes.
Wow. I like that. Looking ahead, what are your aspirations and goals, both personally and professionally, in the realm of coaching and endurance sports?
I think continuing to be a cycling coach is something that I see for my future. One way or another, having the bike in my life has it's been a constant for me, whether that be my own time on the bike or coaching others to ride a bike. It's something that I see myself wanting to do for a while. So right now, if whatever this looks like, you know, I hope to continue growing. I am looking to bring on more clients. I've grown a lot in the last few months since doing this full time, and it's been awesome. I've learned a lot. Time management. I think post grad school, I hit a little bit of a slump there, trying to figure out what I was going to do, what the next chapter of my life was going to look like, and coming off of working presidential security or racing mountain bikes at the world international level, figuring out what was next. I was feeling some pressure to want to do something that was fulfilling, and it made the most sense for all of those experiences to go towards something like riding and coaching a bike. So that's what I want out of my future right now is more bikes and more coaching.
Good. So that's a great segue into my next question, because on a broader level, you're working with George at Otter House Coaching. How do you see that coaching business evolving in the future?
I'm committed and very happy with where things are going with Otter House. George is doing a fantastic job organizing events. There are training races that Otter House Racing has going on, which is a separate entity from Otter House Coaching. But he's sponsoring events. I think continuing to be involved in the cycling community from a coaching standpoint. I personally would like to find a place that is safe for me to one day race again, where it doesn't make anyone feel things. I would love to be able to race a bike someday again, and whatever category that looks like, that provides the least amount of emotional backlash. I would love to be able to do that to further connect with other cyclists. So I think continuing to be involved involved in the racing community with Otter House is something that I look forward to.
Well, excellent. Well, then my last question for you then is, as we wrap up here, how best can the Laughers stay updated with you on social media or otherwise?
So Coach Avery, just Coach Avery, A-V-E-R-I, on Instagram. That's probably the best place for folks to keep up with the coaching side of things.
Well, that's great. And we'll be sure to put that social media handle, Laughers, in the show notes for you as well. So if you're driving or working out, you can collect it that way as well. And I want to thank you so much, Avery. This has been incredibly fun chatting up with you today about your journey in life, in the service, cycling, and emerging as a successful coach in the cycling world at Otter House Coaching. Thank you for sharing about you and your expertise today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Dawn. This was so fun.
It was so fun. And Laughers, to learn more about Avery and or connect with her or her coaching services, be sure again to follow her on Instagram at Coach Avery, or you can visit otterhouse.com. That's OTTERHAUS.com to link up with her and get more information in general. Also, don't forget that discount on Prepopsterous using promo code LAUGH15 at Prepopsterous.com. That way you can munch on it when you join me on next week's episode. And lastly, and most importantly, thanks for tuning in, laughers. Out of all the podcasts out there, you picked us, and we think that's pretty darn special, just like you. Until next time, keep smiling. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring one to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share this podcast with a friend, and until next time, cheers.